door shivered.
"I'm so stupid," she muttered. "I should have known, three of us. I should never have come straight here."
Hunter's head was moving from side to side. She had noted the position of each of the friars and each of the crossbows. She had calculated the odds of getting Dor over the side of the bridge first unharmed, then with only minor injuries, and lastly with major injury to herself but only minor injury to Dor. She was now recalculating. "And what would you have done differently if you had known?" she asked. "I wouldn't have brought him here for a start," said Dor. "I'd have found the Marquis." Hunter put her head on one side. "You trust him?" she asked directly. And Dor knew she was talking of Decarabus, not Richard.
"Yes," said Dor. "I more or less trust him."
Dor had been 5 years old for just 2 days. The market was being held in the gardens at Kew on that day, and her father had taken her with him as a birthday treat. It was her first market. They were in the butterfly house, surrounded by brightly coloured wings, iridescent, weightless things that entranced and fascinated her, when her father crouched down beside her. "Dor," he said, "turn around slowly and look over there, by the door." She turned and looked. A dark-skinned man, wearing a big coat, his black hair tied behind him in a long ponytail, was standing by the door, talking to two golden-skinned twins, a young man and a young woman. The young woman was crying, in the way that grown-ups cry, keeping it inside as much as they can, and hating it when it still pushes out at the edges, making them ugly and funny-looking on the way. Dor turned back to the butterflies. "You saw him?" asked her father. She nodded. "He calls himself the Marquis de Carabas," he said. "He's a fraud and a cheat and possibly even something of a monster. If you're ever in trouble, go to him. He will protect you, girl. He has to." Dor looked back at the man. He had a hand on the shoulder of each of the twins and was leading them from the room, but he glanced back over his shoulder as he left, and he looked straight at her and smiled an enormous smile, and then he winked at her. The friars who surrounded them were dark ghosts in the fog. Dor raised her voice.
"Excuse me, brother," she called to Brother Sable. "But our friend who's gone to get the key, if he fails, what happens to us?"
He took a step towards them, hesitated, and then said, "We escort you away from here, and we let you go."
"What about Richard?" she asked.
Beneath his cowl, she could see him shaking his head, sadly, finally.
"I should have brought the Marquis," said Dor,
and she wondered where he was and what he was doing. The Marquis de Carabas was being crucified on a large X-shaped wooden construction Mr. Vandemar had knocked together from several old pallets, part of a chair, a wooden gate, and something that appeared to be a cartwheel. He had also used most of a large box of rusting nails. Mr. Croup had supervised the construction and made useful suggestions, between scavenging about the hospital, looking for useful implements. Now Mr. Vandemar was up a ladder, hauling the whole construction around, marquee and all.
"A little bit up," called Mr. Croup,
who was down at ground level.
"Little to the left. Yes, that'll do it lovely."
It had been a very long time since they had crucified anybody. The Marquis de Carabas' arms and legs were spread into a wide X shape. Nails went into his hands and feet. He was also roped around the waist. He was, to all intents and purposes, unconscious. The whole construction dangled in the air from several ropes in a room that had once been the hospital staff cafeteria.
On the ground below, Mr. Croup had assembled a large mound of sharp objects, ranging from razors and kitchen knives to abandoned scalpels and lancets and a number of interesting things Mr. Vandermeer had found in the former dental wing. There was even a poker from the furnace room.
"Why don't you see how he's doing, Mr. Vandermeer?" asked Mr. Croup.
Mr. Vandermeer reached out his hammer and prodded the Marquis experimentally with it. The Marquis de Carabas was not a good man, and he knew himself well enough to be perfectly certain that he was not a brave man. He had long since decided that the world, above or below, was a place that wished to be deceived, and to this end he had named himself from a lie in a fairy tale, and created himself, his clothes, his manner, his carriage, as a grand joke. There was a dull pain at his wrists and his feet, and he was finding it harder and harder to breathe. There was nothing more to be gained by feigning unconsciousness, and he raised his head as best he could and spat a gob of scarlet blood onto Mr. Vandermeer's face. It was a brave thing to do, he thought, and a stupid one. Perhaps they would have let him die quietly if he had not done that. Now, he had no doubt, they would hurt him more. And perhaps his death would come the quicker for it. The open kettle was boiling fiercely. Richard watched the bubbling water and the thick steam and wondered what they were going to do with it. His imagination was able to provide any number of answers, most of which would have been unimaginably painful, none of which turned out to be correct. The boiling water was poured into a pot, to which Brother Philigenus added 3 spoons of dried, shredded leaves. The resultant liquid was poured from the pot through a tea strainer into 3 china cups. The abbot raised his blind head, sniffed the air, and smiled. "The first part of the ordeal of the key," he said, "is the nice cup of tea. Do you take sugar?"
No, thank you," said Richard warily.
Brother Philigenus added a little milk to the tea and passed a cup and saucer to Richard.
"Is it poisoned?" he asked.
The abbot looked almost offended.
"Good gracious, no."
Richard sipped the tea, which tasted more or less exactly like tea always tasted.
"But this is part of the ordeal."
Brother Philigenus took the abbot's hands and placed a cup of tea in them.
"In a manner of speaking," said the abbot, "we always like to give the seekers a cup of tea before they start. Part of the ordeal for us, not for you."
He sipped his own tea, and a beatific smile spread across his ancient face.
"Rather nice tea, all things considered."
Richard put down his teacup, almost untouched.
"Would you mind then," he asked, "if we just got on with the ordeal?"
"Not at all," said the abbot. "Not at all."
He stood up, and the 3 of them walked towards a door at the far end of the room.
"Is there..."
Richard paused, trying to decide what he was trying to ask. Then he said,
"Is there anything you can tell me about the ordeal?"
The abbot shook his head. There really was nothing to say. He led the seekers to the door, and then he would wait for an hour or two in the corridor outside. And then he would go back in and remove the remains of the seeker from the shrine and inter it in the vaults. And sometimes, which was worse, they would not be dead, although you could not call what was left of them alive. And those unfortunates the Black Friars cared for as best they could.
"Right," said Richard, and he smiled unconvincingly and added, "Well, lead on, Macduff."
Brother Philigenus pulled back the bolts on the door. They opened with a crash,
like twin gunshots. He pulled the door open. Richard stepped through it. Brother Philiginus pulled the door closed behind him and swung the bolts back into place. He led the abbot back to his chair and placed the cup of tea back in the old man's hand. The abbot sipped his tea in silence. And then he said, with honest regret in his voice,
"Ah, it's Leon Macduff, actually. But I hadn't the heart to correct him.
He sounded like such a nice young man."